South Africa dropped from $459 million in 2023 in the first half.
Yeah.
To $85 million in 2024 the first half.
A startup found as a project of Deloitte funded by MTN and a startup started in Villa Gazi are not the same.
Welcome to the Angle Podcast. This is something we've brought to you where we go behind the stories that are published in our publishing partners, the Mail and Guardian and the Daily Maverick. And myself, Earl Joseph, and Stanley Molota over here, my colleague, we get to talk and disagree and agree and shout at each other about interesting things. Stan, how's it, man?
All good.
You're good?
All good. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm tired, but...
Tired from?
Yeah.
Is that a fist bump?
That's a fist pump. But
that's a tired one.
That's a tired fist bump. Dude, it's hard being a startup in this country.
Hey.
Which, of course, is where we're going to dive straight into it.
Let's get into it, man.
Yeah, because today's episode is actually from one of our content partners, Africa the Big Deal, which is run by the two Maxes, where they just basically round up all the funding that happens in Africa, usually with tickets of $100,000 plus. And what they do is they look at all the trends, the patterns, all of those kinds of things. And what we've got as a kickoff for today is Africa's Startup Funding Roundup, the 2024 mid-year edition. So that's basically the first half of 2024. Which...
Is it good?
No, you know it's not.
Hey.
you know...
I was hoping between the time we spoke and now something changed.
No, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed.
Damn.
But I do know that you and I are probably going to sort of clash swords on a couple of these things. And I think for the guys out there who are listening, one of the things that I think a lot of people don't really... agree on, even though there are multiple definitions, is what a startup is. What's your definition?
Startup, entrepreneurs getting together, starting some entity of sorts to scale that business and make money. Key thing is the entrepreneurs, the individuals involved in solving a particular problem or just getting together to create a nice solution, maybe for convenience or whatever the case may be. But essentially, these are people that come together, create a beautiful solution to address a particular problem with the aim of making money.
Ah, that sounds easy enough, but...
What you got? What's a startup?
I don't think it's too different, but okay. I think you and I clash over what defines a bunch of entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Because in your mind, or as we've fought about before, entrepreneur doesn't have to be someone who's bootstrapping.
Okay, we'll get to that point. I'll put my gloves on, but I'll put them on the side for now. We'll get to that point.
I know that we are bootstrappers,
yes,
right, in our startup world, but that's one version of starting up.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Then we need to have tiers of startups.
But a startup is a startup. It's a brand new company.
True.
That's constituted.
You know you're going to get to the point where you're talking investments to startup. And that's where the problem starts.
Yeah, but that's... A startup is a startup. Where you get your money from is...
But that money will highly be linked to the founders of the startup or essentially to the entrepreneurs, that core team that makes the founding team for the startups. Now, if you're going to compare the startup guy from Soweto versus the startup guy from Stellenbosch, that guy is already disadvantaged from Soweto.
Yeah, but that's...
Then we should have those tiers.
No, that's just a function of privilege. That doesn't change...
Aha, again, yeah, then have a clear tier. You guys are privileged. You guys have your own form of thing going on there.
What's the purpose of tiering it?
So that there's fair opportunity in funding. So if we know this is the tier that got the funding, no, it's very clear. We're not confusing the tier that's in Stellenbosch that got the funding versus the tier that's in Soweto, Alexandra and Muleji that's getting the funding.
So you're not what's the word? You're not rejecting the notion that a startup isn't a small micro enterprise.
It is a small micro enterprise.
No, ergo it's not. The name
SME.
No, that's not a startup. Small micro enterprise does not equal a startup. Small medium micro enterprise. That's just an enterprise. That has nothing to do with startup, which is important because we have to define what a startup is in this context.
All right. Well, in this context, I think it's very clear. They put it to money.
Well, yes. For this particular startup funding roundup, it's quite a mouthful.
Arr.
But Africa the Big Deal is speaking about raising at least $1 million. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Wait, $1 million or $100,000?
No. In this particular one, they're speaking primarily about those who raised $1 million in the last. So they're comparing.
But those are the 27 that they speak to.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But
what's the 100,000 tier they mentioned?
Yeah, that is the tier that sits. Well, they talk about those who are 100,000 plus.
Yeah,
that forms the bottom level of what they count. So
there's a tier somewhere.
No. They're just saying that to describe where most of the money is being invested.
Yeah.
They wanted to just get a.
Most of the money goes to the 27 that they mentioned.
Exactly. So it's
more than a bar.
Yeah. And also remember there's series, right? So, again, for those who don't know what series means, it's you get a whole bunch of capital raises. So, you know, people who give you money, it starts with friends and family who put you up in their garage for a while until you build something, and then you go to the angel round where people say, okay, well, that's nice. Is that a prototype? Is that a minimum viable product? And they give you more money. Then you go to market, and then you get pre-seed, and then you get seed, and then you get Series A, Series B, Series D. So all of those, it's interesting enough that in the startup world, and which is something I really dislike, is that the value of the company is not necessarily only determined by the revenue you make,
mm-hmm.
but also by the money you'd raise
in investments. Which is what makes a unicorn essentially, right?
Yeah, well, we'll get to what a unicorn is because essentially I find it difficult to understand that the value of your company...
Sorry, just a sec.
Yeah. Oh.
Good Lord. Sorry. Forgot to switch my phone off.
The life of a founder. So,
hey man.
So,
I'm trying to tell you,
the thing about it is in this Silicon Valley model, it goes back to the days when you had a Facebook that would go and get 200 million users, but didn't know how to extract revenue from them, right? So then people knew that there was this group of people that was using the product, and they were prepared to put in hundreds of millions of dollars, and that increased the value of Facebook.
Yeah.
But when you looked at it relative to the amount of money they were earning, it didn't really tally in, say, a more traditional business model. A traditional business model looks at, okay, we put money in, you sell a product, people buy the product, you earn some revenue, and then you start working out your valuations, then you invest more, and then you grow the business, etc. The tech startup world, I think, was a problem, and in the sense that it creates a false sense of value.
It does in some way.
And in Africa, what is an African startup in that context? So given that the Silicon Valley model, as I understand it, because I'm no expert, is that your valuation goes up.
Right.
Consistently with every investment raise. Now, I haven't looked at a lot of these, the financial statements of some of these startups, but I get the sense that profitability isn't your first aim, right?
No, it's not. I mean, look at Uber, who else? Uber.
Amazon.
Amazon, Airbnb, and a whole bunch of them. There was a report recently that, Uber just recently started being profitable after how many millions and billions of US dollars
and being that, invested in it? So that,
and its valuation just kept growing, but the company was not profitable. And a lot of those tech startups that we see that are unicorns, essentially, are not profitable yet. Airbnb hasn't been profitable. Apparently, Spotify as well hasn't been. But a lot of money keeps going into those companies and their valuation just keeps going up. But they're not making money.
Okay, so how does that translate to, say, an African startup?
It's and then very interesting.
More particular, the South African startup, right?
Well, which begs your question, what is an African startup?
Right. You see, and then I think for me, that's really where the difficulty lies. I come from a background of profitability.
Yeah.
Okay. And very, very tight investment backers.
Mm.
So it's not so much that you can say, okay, I've got 27,000 readers of my magazine.
Right.
And
right.
That should be worth X. And therefore, if you put another 10 million rand into my company, yes, I'm not profitable yet, but I can grow that 27,000 to 500,000. And then, yes, I'm still not profitable. I can tell you, everybody in that market would have just laughed me out of the room. In fact, they did.
When you tried to sell.
Right. Okay, so it is a very weird culture.
It is. I mean, worse, you do not get VC funding if you don't have historic
That's
revenues.
Venture capital funding, yes.
Yes. Venture capital. You don't get that funding if you can produce historic revenues. But for your valuation, you don't necessarily need historic revenues. You just need investment.
Are you saying large revenues?
No, to sit in front of a VC, one of the key things they ask for is historic revenues, which is why in South Africa, in particularly, we have a problem with startups. You do know, at least in my experience, and from the startups that I've been around, that I've worked with, and from the information online, even we have a lot of resources being deployed at product development. But beyond product development, when you go to access to market and commercialization, there's a problem there. Example I can give you is Senso, the product I worked with. It's a great product development story for the innovation hub, right? Which largely gets their funding from government. But they can take that product to the market. They can go as far as developing the product. But beyond that, it's a problem. Now the problem comes in when Senso has to sit in front of a VC, historic revenues. And that is a consistent theme within the South African tech.
But is it revenues or is it also a combination? Well, is it a combination of revenues and user base, especially if it's a B2C, if it's a business to consumer?
Yeah,
surely if you've got traction with a user base, the revenue part isn't as important if you've got people using your product.
Well, then that would mean the VCs would at least take a letter of intent. If I am a small business or a startup and I'm showing you as a VC to go, I have 1, 2, 3 letters from potential customers who are willing to buy or subscribe or whatever the case may be, and they're showing quantities, then the VC must be able to go, okay, if you don't have a user base, at least that is a good intent.
Yeah, but that's in a business to business context. I'm talking in a business to consumer context, right?
Right.
So if you're doing business to consumer, and well, let's just say you come up with some sort of social media platform, and you go to market, you build it, you go to market. You don't have a revenue model, so to speak. You don't know how you're going to monetize it, but you go there, and suddenly there's 100,000 people who are using it, right? Surely that then makes it something that a venture capitalist would be interested in, because you've got 100,000 people. You haven't figured out how to extract, because you see,
that's easier because that model has been proven by the proliferation of all the social media platforms. If you don't know, all that means is you don't know how to sell the data that you're getting off of your platform. That's an easy problem for the VC to solve.
Okay, all right, but let's look at. I think we've kind of gone into more of an educational situation here.
It's the startups.
Yeah, it does make us tired just thinking about it. But
boy, I'm telling you.
I know, I've been at this for years. But from what a startup is, where we've said it's a bunch of entrepreneurs get together, raise some money, build something, take it to market.
Right.
That's essentially a startup.
Sure.
Okay. Then we get to a point where in the first half of 2024, according to these guys, and if you remember, we were talking about of companies that managed to raise
about in dollars.
$1 million in the last 6 months,
right?
Essentially, then they went down. Now this is really, really important, and why we're actually having this conversation.
The crash.
Okay, so in 2022, the first half of 2022. African startups had raised $3.2 billion.
$3.2 billion, first half of 2022.
Yes. Mm. Okay. We are in 2024, and the first half of 2024, we've only raised $780 million.
Oops.
Now, everybody who's commentating on this, and you and I have spoken about this, are calling it a drought, a winter, a turn down. It's a crash. Why does nobody consider this a crash?
Because maybe there's a way this could rebuild and come up again.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I mean, we're going to watch a little clip now from Newsroom Africa where they discuss this a little bit about what they call a founding drought.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, let's watch that for a second.
All right, cool. Okay, now tell me, is this unique to South Africa or do you think this is continent-wide?
Well, I mean, if we look at it, okay, now we're hopping away from Newsroom Africa, but based on that, they were talking about 184 startups and $1 billion just in fintech alone, right? And they didn't give a specific time frame. But the reality is that there was this peak in 2021, 2022, and then a precipitous drop-off from 2022 to 2023.
Well, how much of this do you think has anything to do with COVID? Maybe the businesses are struggling to bounce back from the COVID.
No, if you look at it from a trend perspective,
COVID
actually sparked the increase because 2021, 2022 were the two, bumper years.
Right.
In investments. So 2021, 2022.
Yeah, but
you know, that was
perhaps
over.
If COVID continued, that trend would just keep going up. But because COVID sort of ended in 2022, however, whatever that looks like, that somehow affected the investment.
I don't know. I mean, I was looking at, you know, I think Founders Factory had some commentary, and they were saying that there's a whole bunch of factors, right? It's geopolitical issues, there's government regulation, and it goes back to some of the governance things. Mm. I know South Africa is trying to, people are lobbying for a startup act. I was hilarious that there was one of those other websites that we went to, and they were just going, South Africa is a thriving startup economy. And I just thought it was hilarious. You know, government is making it easier. Where?
You tell me.
Which regulations, which funding access, which market access. If you go through all of those things, I mean, you picked up from that very same website.
Yeah.
Of the top 10 startups.
Yeah.
How many were white and how many weren't?
There were like two that were co-founded by black people. The rest were like
and co-founded.
Yeah.
Not even solely founded.
Yeah.
So there were white people across the top 10, according to that, yep, according to that website. Yep. Now, that is scary to me.
But I like how we're looking continent-wise. Because if you look at, according to that report even, if you look at the 27 companies that are listed there, majority of them...
Wait, let's just qualify that 27 companies. The 27 companies, not 1 million plus, eh? It's 100 million.
It's
100 million plus.
Whoa.
The 1 million plus is a whole other...
100 million.
100 million plus other 27 companies.
That makes sense. Of those 27, I think I saw about five, about five that were listed as African unicorns. Anyhow, conversation for another day. But what I was saying is, what we're seeing in South Africa versus what the rest of the continent looks like, there seems to be more black-founded businesses
outside of South Africa.
Outside of South Africa. If you go to Nigeria, Nigeria has produced, I think, about four unicorns. And all of them are...
Did we explain what a unicorn is? I don't think we did we?
I do not think
so. No. A unicorn is, for those of you who don't know, is a company that's a tech startup that eventually reaches the $1 billion market value. It's not necessarily $1 billion in revenue, but in terms of market value.
Right.
So it's valued at that moment. Not market value. I think it's director's valuation, actually.
Yeah, it's valuation. It's not related to the market.
Yeah, so it's a valuation of $1 billion.
Yeah.
South Africa produced one.
Which is nowhere to be found.
Interesting, yeah, because in Africa, the big deal, Go One, which is the company, which is a...
Edutech company.
Go One is the South African unicorn. But they didn't feature on the 27 that had a raise of over 100 million.
Dude, they don't feature anyway. Except maybe from Forbes and a few other publications and websites. But the media in South Africa is not even saying anything about that. If you go on any search engine and you go South African unicorn, a lot of the articles will say mythical idea yet to come. The next one is. You will not find a bunch of articles that says, Go On. You know why? I just thought of that now. It's actually founded by a black man.
You think so? Well, is it really? Actually, it isn't. Come on. We know that it was founded by one black guy and a bunch of white guys from Australia.
Yes.
Let's be honest.
But they have the black guy as the face of the product.
Well, not in Australia. In Australia, they don't even mention him.
That is true. Well, in South Africa, and Forbes is there.
Well, Forbes Africa, Forbes Australia, it's all Andrew Barnes.
Damn.
Yeah.
But there goes the problem.
But the thing about it is that, the biggest issue, that, I mean, we started out by talking about this precipitous drop-off in funding, right? South Africa dropped from, what was it? $459 million in 2023 in the first half.
Yeah.
To $85 million in 2024, the first half.
Mm.
All right. Now, again, we're talking about those $1 million plus, right?
Right.
It's scary. It's absolutely scary. And the question is, why is this happening?
Hey, with startups, how does a startup get funding? Maybe let's start there. What makes a startup attractive for funding?
Actually, you know what? Let's start. We'll watch this clip by ENCA.
Yeah.
On what is it called? On why South African startups fail to reach potential.
Okay, let's go to that.
All right. So, on the basis of what these, you tell me, you found that clip.
Dude,
what is this thing about why South African startups are failing to attract revenue? I mean investment. I mean from $459 million to $85 million. in 1 year.
One problem that stood out is the attrition rate.
Attrition?
Yeah, there's a lot of dropouts in the startup sector. Like a lot of businesses are failing. So when that attrition rate is high, any investor would go, I'm not going there. My money's not safe. Then the second problem, maybe the second question to that problem is, why is the attrition rate that high?
Well, does it go to... Well, I mean, but this is where...
Then the second question is the quality of the... What do they say? The quality of the entrepreneurs.
Yeah, this is where I think you and I also had a bit of a fight.
Yeah.
Right?
Because that quality is a problem.
Okay, but I don't think I necessarily agree with you on quality. I think...
Do you know what they mean by quality?
No, what do you mean by quality?
No, do you know what they mean by quality?
Who's they?
The people investors. Who complain about the quality is education, skills, and how do they determine that? Is L is from media space. If he creates in media, the quality there is high.
Mm-hmm.
You look at a Naked Insurance. The founders are from University of Pretoria. They were, what were they doing there? They were, I forgot what the profession is, but they worked in insurance. Now, they worked in insurance and created an insurance product that is a high quality level of an
insurance. Okay, I don't see a problem with that. Do you?
I do not see that problem. I don't see that as a problem. However, it is a problem in as far as a pipeline is concerned.
Okay.
You're not going to get a lot of entrepreneurs through that type of a pipeline if that's your model for a quality entrepreneur. Since we are a country that normally would look at the West, most of the West-created tech startups were not created by graduates.
Is that a fact?
Yeah.
No, man. I'm almost certain most of them are tech people.
Where?
They would have come up. Okay, I can't speak with any.
Thank you. A lot of them are not graduates. They're just guys who mastered a skill and created.
Are you talking in tech or across the board?
In tech, specifically in tech. I mean, we're talking tech. Naked Insurance is but they call it insure tech because they use a bunch of AI to determine your risk and all of that stuff. So they are insure tech. They are very tech specific.
Right.
So again, we're copying from the West, but the West does not necessarily follow this model. We just chose to go, okay, when it comes here, we'll pick from this tier that's educated, that's from corporate, and we'll create products. We'll take products that are from them. Now, hence I keep going back to this thing about tiers. Now, if you are to consider entrepreneurs from previously disadvantaged communities, what quality level of education are you going to get there? But does that necessarily mean the quality of the entrepreneur is low because they do not have a high quality education?
Okay. So I think it's a complicated one because if you look at the smaller tickets, right? So what do they look at? Like $100,000 plus, which is not a small ticket in South African terms. $100,000 is a fair whack of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Okay.
It's not quite.
But there were like 400 plus startups in Africa at 100K plus.
Yeah.
And that came out at about $40 million. That's across the continent.
Right.
So clearly that number versus 780 million. Are at $1 million plus.
Yeah.
Would speak exactly to that point. You're not going to invest $1 million plus in somebody who doesn't have a proven track record in the industry that they're going into. So, for instance, you back the jockey, especially if it's early stage, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to back the jockey. And if the jockey doesn't really know the industry they're going into... I'm a perfect example of that. When we tried to launch...
I have a problem with this back the jockey rubbish.
Why? You got to back the jockey.
Yeah, but it's how you back the jockey that's a problem.
Well,
do you back the jockey by saying the jockey By looking at the jockey and seeing if they tick certain boxes, or do you back the jockey by recognizing the skill and the talent they have and creating a structure around them? In that way, you are backing the jockey.
But again, it's the level at which you're coming in. You're not gonna spend more than, let's say, R500,000 on somebody who still has to skill up. And of who course. Also doesn't have the experience of the industry. So I'll give you an example. When we built,
yeah,
and it came out of a it's not really a joint venture. It was a company created between an equity partner and my previous employer.
Right.
And we built a piece of technology. Neither the equity partner was supposed to come in with both equity, cash, as well as access to market, because right. they also own the Stockfell Association. When we built it and we tried to take it to market,
yeah,
we assumed, when I say we, I'm talking about me, essentially, assumed that the equity partner would make it possible for us to take it to market. And we tried to take it to market. Eventually, we just kind of gave up. We were like, okay, the Stockfell thing is just really, really difficult to break into.
Yeah.
And for various reasons, okay? Then I thought, actually, I like the piece of technology.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to take it from that market and I'm going to try and productize it to go direct to consumer, not necessarily to groups.
Right.
Direct to consumer. Let's see if we can take it into market direct to consumer, which was a vouchering. It was actually a discounting platform.
Yeah.
Which had back-end integration into the retailers. And right. the idea was that we would go and... get the manufacturers, you know, the Tiger Brands, the Unilevers, the Amcas of the world,
right,
to then allow us to discount in the retailers using the retailers as redemption partners. It took me 2 years,
yeah,
to realize that I knew how little I knew about the fast-moving consumer goods market. It's such a closed ecosystem.
Yeah.
That when you look from the outside, you make certain assumptions, and then you go there only to realize that you made the wrong connections in your mind. So what I'm trying to say is that the quality, I had had, say, for instance, somebody from that market.
Right, right.
Informing the design of the product, I mean, it all worked.
Right.
It worked beautifully technically. But when we started to look at where the revenue was going to come from, we assumed that it would come from the manufacturers.
Sure.
So that we could proliferate and get traction with the consumers.
But tell me here, whose responsibility do you believe it is to create an environment upon which you can, one, or investors can get the best out of entrepreneurs and small businesses? I ask that in this sense.
Mm.
You took too long to fail. You took 2 years to fail on a project or product that possibly could have taken you 6 months to fail, pivot, and then create something better.
Yeah, but it was all my own money.
Of course, that's the thing. Hence, I'm saying, whose responsibility is it between maybe investors, VCs, and government to create that environment where L can quickly fail, iterate, and then get to a product that actually makes sense? So if we're having a lot of startups, entrepreneurs, that are creating in an environment that's full of risks, who should take that risk away? Because ultimately, that environment is what produces quality entrepreneurs. If you look at our counterparts, the boys on the other side of South Africa, they have great friends and family in terms of that seed funding. Well, not seed, pre-seed. That round of friends and family, that gets them a long way. They would have went through maybe 2 to 3 failures with that money before they get to the next round of funding. you don't get that. You don't get that opportunity. So how does that environment create for you a great entrepreneur? How does that environment create for you that great jockey? How do you back that jockey? Hence, I ask, is it the environment that is bad or is it the jockey? You gave the jockey a terrible horse at a racetrack that is just rubbish. And you're saying, I cannot back this jockey.
I mean, that's an interesting idea. I mean, if we think of, I mean, what's the folklore around people like Mark Shuttleworth, that he sat in his garage and he didn't really come from the industry, did he?
No.
Not that I'm aware of.
Bill Gates?
Elon Musk, where did he come from?
Again.
Did he come from the industry?
No.
It's interesting. So the tech but guys...
That, again, where does that apply? West. We copy that, but we omit those parts that made those guys successful. When we come here, we change that model to go, yeah, when it comes to you black guys, we'll do it this way.
I mean,
we'll overlook that friends and family round of funding, which gets you a long way.
If you have a particular skill, right? And
yes.
You want to solve a very specific problem.
There you go.
Assuming that you know the source of that problem.
Okay.
Okay, so let's just go back to my failed startup, right?
Yeah.
I knew there was a source of a problem because there was already an existing service,
yeah,
but it was only web-based.
Right.
Okay, and that was and the problem there was that the manufacturers were being cut out of the data that was created by the retailers through their rewards programs, right?
Yeah.
So things like Smart Shopper, etc. So it was generating a lot of data, but it was generating the data for the retailers.
Mm.
So Unilever created their own version of a discounting platform and said, okay, we want to at least use this as a means to gather data on our consumers because our consumers are not engaging with us directly. They're engaging with the retailer who carry our products. So I took that and then Unilever pulled out of that particular platform for some, I think it had to do with the privacy and the consumer data issues.
Right.
So I thought that's great, but it's only available to people with internet connections and browsers. There was no app or anything.
Yeah.
So we built at great cost a USSD interface to the same backend.
Boy.
Okay. And it made absolute sense as long as Unilever was the main customer.
Your anchor client.
Right. But as soon as Unilever pulled out, and I thought, okay, I can replicate this with, say, Rhodes or Tiger Brands, etc., didn't happen. And when I flew down to Cape Town, met with the people at Rhodes, said, this is what it does. And then I discovered that brand managers want the data.
Yeah.
But the people who are in charge of the discounting are the sales guys.
Yeah.
So they will only discount to move volumes. But in our business model, if you moved volumes, it cost them too much. It actually increased the cost to them.
Yeah.
And reduced their margins. So we couldn't get around that fact because the brand managers were like, please do it so that we can get the data on our markets.
Yeah.
And the sales guys were like, no, I'm using my discounting to move volumes.
Right.
So, and they had a great relationship with the retailers. So they didn't care. As far as the sales guys were concerned, the only data they needed was volumes data, what was moving.
Yeah.
Right? And the retailers were giving that to them. But it was the consumer data that was needed that they couldn't get. So what I'm saying is that we built the technology. So if you look at it from a friends and family point of view, we were lucky. We had investors. I mean, it was built by a company that was a software development company.
Right.
So the software was built. We had some capital in there. So that was already there. But when we tried to take it to market, it failed.
Yeah, it just sounds like you guys did not have enough runway, especially around defining or making clear what the problem is and to whom the problem is to. Because you went to the wrong department with the right problem, essentially.
Well, what it came down to was...
And it wasn't clear within the organizations who should pay for it. Because it sounds like you guys had a problem, approached the wrong department, and were looking for the money to come from, again, the wrong department. So, and a lot of your resources were spent in that exercise. And that exercise exhausted the amount of resources you had. And then...
Well, we had no resources because once Unilever pulled out, all the companies pulled out. The investors pulled out,
etc. That failure is so bad because you understand the product did not necessarily fail.
Yeah, the product's great. The
product is great.
It's just we didn't know how to get the product to market with a revenue base.
Is it fair to attribute that product to the attrition rate of startups?
I think it is because as much as I've started successful companies in the past,
yeah,
this was well out of my experience and comfort zone.
I get that. But would you say that startup failed because it was a bad product? No, it was a good product. It failed. So what was the problem? Was the problem that it was made by an entrepreneur who was low quality entrepreneur? No, that is not the case.
But wouldn't I have been a low quality entrepreneur in that case?
No.
In that particular venture.
How does a low quality entrepreneur produce a high quality product?
I don't understand.
If you're a low quality entrepreneur, how could you have came up with such a brilliant product?
But was it that brilliant?
It was. There was nothing wrong with the product itself. It was how you guys communicated it. You had a communication problem. You did not have a quality problem as an entrepreneur. Well, one could say the fact that you couldn't communicate makes you a bad entrepreneur, which is not true.
Not only communicate, I couldn't find the revenue source.
No, but you were in the with the client that was ultimately to pay, but as to which department, you were struggling, you were bouncing between the two departments. This department needed it, but that department had to pay for it. So it was hard to then consult the two and go, okay, you pay for it, you need it, you'll see the... That was tough to get around.
Yeah, and that's a corporate sales problem.
There you go. And that exhausted your resources.
Yeah, fair enough.
What I can join together is this L as a poor quality entrepreneur? Is this an inferior product? Both are not true. But that product will contribute to the attrition rate of startups.
Okay, I see what you're trying to say. But I.
And we have a lot of those. We have a lot of products in South Africa that end at product. And one of the bigger problems of that is because they do not have historic revenues. And then the media is going to make a lot of noise around the attrition rate in startups.
Yeah.
But how do you get the startups to get across an investor and be able to show historic revenues? If those guys are going to look for historic revenues, where are these guys supposed to get it? I'll give you a perfect example.
Mm.
Botswana is doing very well. I'm surprised it doesn't come up on the report. Botswana woke up to a realization that we will not do any better with our startups if we as government or government organizations don't become the first customers to these products. Now, what they do that side in Botswana, that product you're talking about, government would have been, some organization in government would have been the first customer to buy from that. So when you sit across someone, you go, give us more money. There, we made money. And Botswana is doing that with a lot of their startups now. And their startups are becoming more and more successful. It's just, maybe it's a thing that started maybe like 5 years ago.
So that's a way of, what you're saying is that to get your runway as opposed to just throwing cash into the business.
Buy from the business. You're creating books for this startup. You're creating a value that's so great. The startups may not even be able to go, maybe even realize it. Because if you are buying from the startup, any other investor that sits and go, historic revenues. Great product, will it work? Like, yes, it worked. They bought.
But isn't that a kind of false economy?
Well, doesn't it work?
It's a difficult one. I tell you, I mean, I get it because in a place.
Well, again, I mean, if the government is going to back your product, the government better make sure they do their due diligence. They're not going to just buy it because you're selling. You're not going to walk up to a government selling snake oil and the government's going to buy. Come on.
I hear you. But I mean, let's look at, if we go back to the first half of this year.
Yeah.
And the numbers that came out was which sectors were attracting the most investment, right? Logistics, interestingly, fintech used to be
the darling
of African startups. Everyone was investing in, you know, it was, what do you call this, mobile money? M-Pesa, yeah. I don't agree that M-Pesa was a startup. It's not. It was created inside Safaricom. So I don't see that as a startup. But the principle...
But you do see TymeBank as a startup.
I do see TymeBank as a startup, yes.
Good Lord.
So essentially, if you look at it, logistics and transport, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
That they got the lion's share of a very small amount, to be fair, compared to the previous years.
Yeah.
But electric vehicles, imagine financing, and e-hailing, logistics and transport, with 12 companies, outstripped fintech.
With all their unicorns.
Well, I think the unicorns were kind of overinvested at that point. So I think it's now a matter of new entrants. And I think there were a couple of exits along the way, and these numbers don't include exits. That 12 companies in logistics and transport attracted more investment than fintech.
Interesting. I wonder what if that has anything to do with that article I shared with you around problems with fintech.
Yes, you did mention it.
I saw somewhere online, there were 1,800 and something security breaches across fintechs that cost on average about $40 million.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's quite considerable.
Yeah.
But do you think
maybe that's...
Possibly. I mean, possibly. I mean,
legislations are coming up here and there on this fintech if you're laundering money.
Yeah, but it also...
Some of those platforms are the perfect scapegoat for that stuff.
I get it. But also, I think there's also a saturation point. I mean, fintech over the last 3 years has just been massively pumped. Had to be at some point where the bubble bursts. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I have a feeling that's probably it. And what's on the rise is obviously energy and water. So there's lots of solar and climate tech.
Right,
and there's also 12 companies that were raised $1 million+.
12 companies in climate tech?
Yes.
Damn.
Followed by agri and food, which I think was online wholesale. I think those were 12 companies as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of those online markets on farms and farm products.
Yeah, those kinds of products. So those were the top four. Now, in South Africa?
We only have TymeBank.
Yeah, Time, and what was the other one? Planet Jumo. 42. Yeah, but Jumo is in dispute. As to whether
hot
it's
and cold.
Whether it's South African or not.
Aye. What is Planet 42? Where's that guy from? Serbia?
No.
He is a Serbian who...
No. Those guys came from Estonia.
Estonia.
Yeah, but they're based here. Right?
Again, so, what is an African startup? Is it a startup found in Africa? Is it a startup by Africans?
I'm sure they consider themselves Africans. I don't know. The point I'm making here is that in South Africa...
Good Lord.
Most of the money is going to these larger startups.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Your Pineapples, your Naked Insurance,
TymeBank, etc.
TymeBank, is it?
What? TymeBank is a startup. It is. If you really think about it, it's a bunch of entrepreneurs.
The weirdest startup ever. Look out, Deloitte comes up, MTN comes up, Commonwealth Bank of whomever comes up. And
yes, but those were investors. And incubators. If you think about it, it was a project within Deloitte's, right? It was an idea. So how different is that to my companies or the company that I worked for coming up with a solution for Stockfels? Then it didn't work out. Then I take the solution and I, as the entrepreneur, I leave the company.
Do you want to know the key difference?
What?
Deloitte had fund from MTN.
What's the difference between the company that I was working for that technology was funded? It was funded
by who?
Not a venture capital, but an equity partner. So Villa Clark, the software company invested by building the technology. The go-to-market at the time was funded by the equity partner who had equity in the Stockwell Association. So I didn't invest any money in that technology.
I get and it, in any of those learnings. But you did not have a big corporation put money at it, which is key.
Yeah, but we don't know how much was spent on this project.
Yeah, but it's very clear online that it says MTN funded this project by Deloitte, which then turns out to be TimeBank.
No. Those guys took it out just as I spun out that technology and decided I was creating a new company.
Even spun out. It was funded within Deloitte before it was spun out. It was funded within Deloitte, then spun out.
So was mine.
But it was funded within Deloitte by MTN.
But so was mine.
And it looks green, what is it? Yellow and black, like MTN.
But so was mine. Mine was funded before I spun it out. I came out of that relationship with a piece of software. So did these guys. The fact that it was MTN and Deloitte versus Pharos and Vilakazi Street Capital, what's the difference?
I don't know enough about Vilakazi Street to go, this is where you all got your money from. But that one is well documented. It's right there.
Yes, but this was not my money. It came from two companies.
And again, I keep making this argument about the tiers to go, how... Again, let's take if these two companies were to compete for resources, how is it fair for an MTN funded project within Deloitte to compete with a product from Vilakazi Street? To be considered.
Well, we don't know.
To be considered.
Okay, but we don't know how much money.
Doesn't matter.
What if they gave them 100,000?
No, it doesn't matter. For the fact that that company goes and go, we are supported by MTN when we need funding for X amount. Anybody who's any logical investor would go, if MTN saw value in this, this is worth it. You come from Vilakazi Street with what? And you go, we need funding. Yeah, right, Vilakazi Street guys. Nobody's paying attention to that product versus a product funded by MTN within Deloitte or however, with the Deloitte Consulting Project, the two names just pack a mean punch more than a Vilakazi Street freaking can.
Okay, but...
Now, how do you then go, startup from Vilakazi, startup from Deloitte Consulting funded by MTN, and these two companies are supposed to compete for the same resources in the name of them being startups?
But there are different levels.
And you say there shouldn't be tiers.
But it's not a tiered thing. It's the tiers are already built into the amount
levels
of money.
If this okay, so this is 2024, right? Let's assume these two companies are sort of found within the same round year. Immediately they start. This one was already here. The one with the project within Deloitte funded by MTN. It's miles ahead than the poor startup in Vilakazi Street.
I'm not entirely sure because we built a fairly solid product. This is what I'm saying. Technically, I think we built a highly competitive
product. And as we know, that competitive product will not make light of day if it's not supported by the right institutions.
Well, let's just think about that. MTN offered access to market, right?
So
important. So once these guys spun it out and created their own company... It's no longer being incubated.
Right.
This now is it's their a company. Now it's a standalone. I did the same thing. Okay. I went back to Vilakazi Street and said, look, can you give me access to the Stockfels? Right? How different is that to those guys coming out and saying to MTN, look, I know you funded it inside Deloitte, but how about you just partner with me to give me access to your subscriber base? You see what I mean? What's the difference?
Somehow, to you, that's a fair advantage?
But what are you asking about? I mean, I don't understand your issue.
My issue is the amount of resource, the environment upon which you built these things that you call startups, and then putting them on the same platter and going, here are successful startups and here are failing startups. Startups in South Africa are succeeding, and here are the succeeding ones. Startups in South Africa are failing, and here are the failing ones. As if these are the same things. And they are not the same things. And you need to recognize them for not being the same things. A startup found as a project of Deloitte funded by MTN and a startup started in Vilagasi are not the same. They do not have the same resources. They don't look the same on paper. When you put forward funding requirement by a project within Deloitte funded by MTN and a project developed by Ferris, who nobody knows who that is, and by Vilagasi Street, who are these people? Why should we give them money?
Yeah, I suppose that. But then the issue for me is that I don't know. I think the levels are determined by the size of the raise. So if you are at the level that I was, where we had a piece of technology, we had a redemption partner, we had all of those kinds of things. The real difficulty for me was to be able to raise enough money to deal with the issues that you were talking about, right? So be finding where the revenue stream was, who within the corporates, how big was the market, could I scale, all of those kinds of things. Had I found somebody?
And again, you make the point. What did MTN do? Give them a subscriber base.
Yeah.
Which is what you struggled with. Why? Because you were freaking Vilagasi Street.
Well, I would have had a subscriber base if I could figure out how to. I mean, I could have gone back to the Stockfell Association and said, okay, look.
But essentially, you needed someone to come that you could have a conversation with, some form of agreement, and go, I need access to that.
No, I had that access. It was not so much, the subscriber base wasn't the issue. The issue was who was prepared to back me with enough money to create a runway that I could solve one very specific problem.
Would have been a problem because somebody could have came and questioned you on the quality of that subscriber base. If they come and go, we've got a subscriber base from MTN that's already paying and spending so much money versus a banking product that will cost so much. That is clear. These guys have access to a subscriber base that's quality. You have a subscriber base to Stockfells.
No, that if there was anybody you could go to Stockfells through, it was through the Stockfell Association. Yeah.
So of course, then you got to go through a whole lot of things to go, what is the quality? What will they pay? There's a whole lot that
I had done that within Vilagasi Street wire. So that part I'd already done. Yeah. So the only issue that I needed at that point to solve for was who was going to pay for this particular service. And that was the problem that I needed to solve. And I ran out of
the
runway to solve that problem. The software was there, the market, the subscriber base was there, the partnerships were there in terms of redemptions, in terms of the platforms, etc. I just didn't know how to access the market.
You see, that's my gripe, man. How do we build an alternative economy? How do we eradicate unemployment if products like that will not get adequate funding to get market access and to raise more funds? If the only products, the only startups that will see the light of day, that will be recognized as startups, are the likes of your Time Bank. Because that's who you're competing with for funding.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think...
Hence I go, those things should just be on their own. Maybe naked is different. I don't know about the rest. The Time Banks, those guys must just go and just go and be on your own tier. Come on now. With scarce resources as we have, you have to compete with a Time Bank on the name of a startup?
Well, then that brings us to...
By the way.
Yeah.
And how much do they take from that investment that's like supposedly supposed to come to South Africa?
What do you mean?
Like they take $100 million.
Fair enough. Then what does that bring us to? Okay, so let's bring it down a tier. Okay?
Right.
So let's just look at then, let's just bring it to 100,000 US.
Sure.
Okay? So that's, what is that, 1.8 million? Let's call it 2 million rand investment. A 2 million rand pot should have been more than enough for me to have taken that business 100%. Forward. Okay?
Enough runway.
More than enough runway. It was small, and I could probably have brought in a consulting expert on how to navigate that ecosystem. How do we access that 2 million? And that's another issue.
Hence I ask, whose responsibility is it to create that environment upon which startups can thrive? You like saying this thing about hubs, having some form of an ecosystem where you are sitting with VCs in a hub and you create some ground for skills. You have applicants coming in and you draw skills from there.
I call it curating teams. Yes.
Right. If we had those kind of environments, then that will be different. However, as we are in South Africa, we are stuck at product, what do you call it? We will develop products that are great, unmatched. They will end there.
Yeah.
To me, argue that we don't have great products, right? Then I'll go, okay, sharp. We have great products that are struggling just at great products. Some of those newspapers and articles that say we have a great and vibrant startup culture, I think they're onto something. But we can't end at just being great products. We do not lack for products. You just made a great point with the product that you were building, Ukonga. Fantastic product. It ended at product.
I think, yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
We have a great product, Senso. I worked very close with Senso. Boy, great product. It's still struggling at product.
Yeah, there's
and also... And there's a lot of those. How do we get them on the other side so they can unlock that investment? Which is why of the top 10, only two co-founded by black people. The rest...
Were they South Africans?
Yes, their names were...
Or based in South Africa.
The other ones...
I mean, that was another thing that also came up was...
There's a problem.
Was how many of those were expats starting African companies?
Yeah, it's like these guys are failing in their countries and they come here in the name of being African, they succeed.
Well, they bring dollars behind them. And actually, if you
bring dollars to
actually, that's
to
an important, that, that's dollars. Actually a really important thing is that the dollar base, because I often used to chat to this guy, Will Green, who was at Grindstone.
Yeah.
Which Grindstone. Is a, Grindstone. It's a XL. It's a VC.
Ah, sounds familiar.
And his job, to a large extent, is to show international investors what the market looks like here in terms of the startup market, etc. Yeah. And he was saying it's very opaque to external investors. They can't really get in here because they can't see anything.
Yeah.
So it makes sense then that they'll back people from where they are who come in. So if somebody who's in the US or the UK or in Europe says, I am starting this business in Africa.
In Africa to address this problem.
Then
in
they'll
Africa,
back that
here's
person.
The opportunity.
Mm. They'll back that person because they trust that person because that person is from their own backyard.
Right, right.
It's very unlikely that an international investor is going to invest in a local business or a local entrepreneur.
Right.
So that means we have to find local investors.
Right.
And that's where I think a lot of the problem really comes in. Who are the big innovators in Africa? The biggest investors.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the corporates.
It is.
Which corporate is going to invest in somebody who's going to disrupt their business? Nobody.
Nespar 4 years ago.
Especially in the tech. Yes.
When President Ramaphosa said invest, I think they committed about 4.5 billion rands. 3 point odd of that money went to companies they already owned.
Correct.
And a few of those went here and there. But I guess, fortunately enough, in that equation, Sweep South came out of that interaction.
But they didn't threaten anybody. The point is that...
But they threatened with the other products.
So, but they just needed to go and buy out. I mean, that was a big corporate exit strategy for those entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
The thing about it from my perspective is that if you want to create this, if we go with your tiers,
right?
That tier that's right at the bottom, that's the guys who have problems to solve. They may not have all the skills, but they have the entrepreneurial spirit, and then they've got some level of education that they can bring to the party to solve their very small local problem. We're not talking about solving macro problems, So if in your community you've got a problem, there's enough of a community there that you can solve, you just need access to resources.
Yeah, at least demonstrate some level of capability to solve
Correct.
That
and
problem.
if you don't have the tech stuff, then come to a place.
Right.
And what we do know about the places that are supposedly, I mean, we're in the process of trying to put together our own media incubator.
Yes, we are.
All right. And one of the things we're talking about is how much of the money raised
by the
incubator goes to the actual beneficiary. Now, we've structured it that over 68% goes both in cash as well as in resources to support the cohorts that come through the incubator.
Yeah.
I don't think that necessarily happens with the tech startups.
No. Most hubs are not even built like that. If you look at the innovation hub, they will just go as far as product development is concerned. After then you need to go to someone else for market access and other things. But they'll end at that. And I think most incubation hubs or tech hubs end at product development. And to your point, they do not...
Are you talking about the government-funded ones?
All of them. Government-funded ones are worse because they just end at product development. At least the other ones are hybrid. But where they lack is, even when you look online, they prioritize a lot on making the hubs a co-working environment so they can generate some form of revenue. However, they don't have VCs in-house. They will occasionally invite those VCs to come and sit and check what you guys have going on here. And that creates a disparity between what the startups here are doing and what the VCs are looking for. But if you create an environment where the startups are sitting with the VCs and the VCs are creating some pipeline to bring talent into the hubs and to feed into these great minds that are solving problems, you will have a very different outcome. But currently, as we are built, we will just end at product. These hubs will give you that pre-seed, but to build a prototype, then you have to go elsewhere to go find the rest of the money to try and make that prototype a product. And you just end at that level.
Okay. And then, while we wind up now.
Is it about time?
Yeah, it is about time. But I think we didn't even touch on possibly, which I think might need its own session.
On
gender.
Ooh.
I mean, all this business about backing the right jockeys.
No, man, KK can give us 15 extra minutes.
No, it's fine. Ish. The issue is, and I do think this requires, and I think it does require women in the room, not just us talking about it, because then that just, we're just mansplaining shit. The idea, I mean, I thought these numbers were freaking crazy. From that 780 million that was raised in the first half, only 63 million went to female CEO-founded companies.
Damn.
That's 8%.
That is an interesting problem, though.
Well, it means that as much as I'm bitching about, or we're bitching about the fact that jockeys aren't being backed, we're making the assumption that women are even worse jockeys.
Oof.
Just by virtue of them being women.
There you go. So, poor emphasis. Again, this jockey thing is a problem. It's a problem, man. Get rid of the jockey rubbish and look at the problem being solved, if it's a problem worth investing in. Stop. This jockey thing is a rubbish, man.
You've got to have a team
and
that's solid
why?
Enough.
You know why? They'll pull up the rubbish stat that says women-led organizations are safe. They are the most likely to go bankrupt. And they don't grow that fast in revenue. So, which is why women do not have that high risk appetite. Men are very risky. They are more prone to take risk. And which is why they will get into a high risk environment like startup, the jockey.
Yeah, I think we might not be talking about the same type of jockey. But
Is it a jockey or is it a thong?
No, it's a jockey. But I do think... now you're just being rude. Okay, but listen, I think so. I think let's just agree. Well, I think we are in agreement, although I think I dispute the notion of the jockeys. But I think we're in agreement that the South African and the African startup environment is hostile.
It is.
Yeah. And I think it's more exceptionally hostile to women in particular. And I think we will pick that up in the next one.
Yeah.
But, dude, you made me even more tired now.
Yeah, I'm finished.
All right,
I'm finished. All right, man. It's been a nice one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sup.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for watching The Angle Podcast. Be sure to subscribe, like, and share. The link to the article will be in the description below. Be sure to check out our other shows for Frame of Reference and the beautiful finisher that you see here. It's thanks to The Daily Store. Joey, we see you. Thanks.